The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday here in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, why the actions of one school make us want to get out the gloves and put up our dukes. Can we catch some tigers by the tail because of some false market perceptions? And in Money Time today, got to tip our cap just to focus on how brightly one particular sun has been shining.
So, Dave, first take on a Tuesday, and my hunch is, you have some opinions about the college basketball coaching changes that have been taking place over the last couple of days. Some really bizarre hirings, and maybe even more bizarre firings.
Well, there's one we could have actually put it in yesterday's show, but we had more topical things to do right at the very top. We don't use graphs for the first take very often, but we get to do that today. Now, take a look at this one, and let's see if we can make a little bit of sense out of the sequence that's involved. These are the Duquesne University basketball coaches going back the last 25 years. Jim Sadlin, bad loser. John Carroll, bad loser. Scott Edgar, barely won a third of his games. Daryl Porter, oof. Danny Nee, couldn't win a third. Now look at those last three. Edgar, Porter, and Nee combined didn't win one third of their games. So what did Ron Everhart do after that 20-odd years of futility? He goes 99-89. And he gets fired. Duquesne had two winning seasons in 25 years before Everhart was hired. He had four winning seasons out of six. Something really wrong with this picture? Let's go to the chancellor and hear what he has to say. This is coming from Charles Daugherty. He said, quote, he stalled at a modest plateau with our program. He got two winning years in 25. He gets you four. And he has stalled at a modest plateau. He took you somewhere you hadn't been, guy. And, of course, I'm allowed to say this because I'm not officially a Duquesne alum, but I got 24 credits there. So there's a little bit of pride in that school, a little bit of Duquesne in the blood. That's a good academic institution. For Duquesne, of all places, to say that four winning seasons out of six is stalling at a modest plateau, you've just got to be out of your mind. Have you watched Duquesne basketball for the last 31 years? He took you to a good place. Yeah, T.J. McConnell's going to transfer out. That may be good riddance there. Running a clean program, winning games, and actually providing a stable platform that you can build off of into the future, which is something that none of those previous coaches have done. So just like our rant with Tulsa last week with their coaching firing, which will turn bad for them, this will break bad for Duquesne. They will end up with a lesser coach and a lesser record, and they would be thrilled to get back to the modest plateau of having four winning seasons in 6 years. Of course, Michigan, you have don't have those issues with your alma maters. Penn State, Duquesne, I get this backdrop of things that are starting to pile up where you can't have pride in where you were anymore. If anything bad happens at Mapletown High School, don't tell me, okay? Let me at least maintain that one. Okay. So you can be more proud of where you came from. Well, can you be proud of what you brought in today?
But hang on, because Michigan had the whole Rich Rod thing. You know, we had the whole vacating titles thing. We've been there.
But those are fun because that's the winning level you play at. This is Duquesne. This is the little Sisters of the Holy Ghost school that's not supposed to be out there trying to do those things.
Delusions of grandeur. Happens all the time. And in fact, we've got delusions of grandeur all across the country today. My first take has to be about this $363 million Mega Millions lottery jackpot that their lines around the corner in, what, 43 states in the District of Columbia. I happened to read a headline this morning. Strategies for winning the lottery. So had to share them with, because there's a guy who has cashed 7 times the Mega Million, and he shared his secrets with Good Morning America. These are the secrets. Well, pick your own numbers. Don't use the quick pick because not really any mathematical explanation behind it. But that's the strategy. Pick your own numbers.
That's the first one right there.
I wrote it down. I have it written right here. Yeah. The second one, do your homework. Make sure your set of numbers haven't been picked before. And that's supposed to work. Why? How? No.
Yeah, but he's a winner. He's a winner.
Yeah, seven-time winner.
Seven times.
Yeah.
Yep.
Although
he's
I didn't investigate which 7 he won. The third one, stick with your strategy. Commit to your numbers. Okay. Good luck if you're playing the lottery tonight, because that's what it takes. It is luck. Skill, not so much. 1 in 176 million chance to pick all the numbers, including the pick six ball or whatever it is correctly. Of course, here in the state of Nevada, we don't have a lottery. There's no lottery tickets in the 7-Elevens. There's no Mega Millions. There's none of this stuff because we have normal, legal, regulated gambling.
Actually, janitor's got a whole wad of tickets he's selling.
Did he go down to Prim and buy a bunch of them? Bottom line, yeah, not many good strategies for winning the lottery. A little bit of luck involved there. Hopefully on this show we can give you some good strategies for winning at sports. And speaking of sports, hey, we're going to be breaking down the MLB races division by division. We started yesterday with the AL East, moving to the AL Central today. But really, it's play ball. We have Major League Baseball games tonight, or certainly before we're back on air tomorrow, that actually count in the standings. That is Seattle versus Oakland in the Tokyo Dome. The first pitch, 3:10 a.m. Pacific time this morning, breakfast time on the East Coast. You can get up early and watch it. These are games that will count in the standings, even though they're two teams that are unlikely to be playoff bound this season. What do we got? Market Watch. Let's take a look. Felix Hernandez, minus 125 over Brandon McCarthy. Total, 7 under minus 120. Any take on this game, Dave?
My only take is I hope to be awake around the 7th inning stretch tomorrow morning. Will not get up to watch this one. McCarthy, though, going to be one of the more interesting guys to watch in Major League Baseball. When you get into some of his peripheral numbers last year, he was really, really good. The question is, can he repeat it? Now, one of the things you need to do with someone like McCarthy, he was an entirely different pitcher last year for a reason. Changed his mechanics. So throw all of the previous stuff away and only focus on what he did in 2011. Now, he could pitch the same ability level and have worse numbers because now the matchups are different. Opponents will have also thrown that past stuff out of the way. A lot of opponents were preparing to hit a different pitcher than the one was taking the mound. So yeah, we would like to watch McCarthy in the early part of the season. I just don't think our alarm will go off at 3 o'clock to start watching McCarthy now.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be an interesting scenario with McCarthy this year. Here's a guy who drew comparisons to Roy Halladay last year, who's a pretty good guy to draw comparisons to. But again, following up the second year, when opponents are preparing for a different level for the pitcher that you were a season ago, as opposed to the underachieving hurler that you were throughout the first part of your Major League campaign, is going to be a transition for McCarthy himself. Of course, King Felix, you know, we know how good he can be, though his splits against Oakland, not as good as they were against some other teams. The A's obviously see him more than other teams do, and there may be some upside with both of these teams from a value perspective. They play 500 baseball. You'll make money with the A's, you'll make money with the Mariners all season long. Of course, that's a big if, considering where they were for extended stretches a season ago. Continuing with Market Watch, let's take a look at the NIT games tonight. NIT on ESPN. We got a couple of good ones, Dave. Stanford, -2.5 against UMass. Total there, $1.50. Washington, -1 against Minnesota. Total there, $1.43.
Going to have some interest in the opener, the UMass-Stanford game, because we're not necessarily sure that the right favorite has been set for this game. You can make a case that every team Massachusetts has beaten in this tournament so far is better than any team Stanford has beaten. And oh, by the way, Mass beat all three of those better opponents on the road. Stanford, some pretty soft home games. In fact, the only time Stanford left campus in the last month was just a quick trip down to LA for the Pac-12 tournament. So we like the way that this Mass team has come along. Just not sure where the market perception of Stanford as the favorite came from. It was a pretty easy ride for them. UMass had to step up and had to prove something. And keep in mind, too, that that last game, before getting to the Garden, beating Drexel at Drexel, when Drexel was just a hair away from coming to the Garden, that might have been the toughest setting any team has had to face. They fell down early, like they had done in some of the other road games. They fought back hard. This Mass team, they've shown us a lot of fight, a lot of character.
Oh, that win was no joke. I mean, they were down 17 on the road in the second half against a Dragons team that was basically the only team that you can make a case, well, maybe Washington. But really, Drexel was probably the best case you can make for getting snubbed by the NCAA tournament this year. So down 17 on the road. Drexel had won 18 in a row at home, and UMass refused to lose. A lot like what we saw in the opener where they went down to Mississippi State and won in OT in that ballgame, refused to lose. I like the character of this UMass team, and their ball pressure has the potential to give Stanford some trouble. But the Nightcap's an interesting one, the Washington-Minnesota game, because, boy, the Gophers have played good basketball to get here. Another team that has reached the NIT finals, winning, or the semifinals, by winning road games as opposed to a Huskies team that's been winning at home. But when you read the quotes from these two schools, really dramatic difference. From Tubby Smith in Minnesota, hey, going to New York, it's a great reward for our kids. We played hard to get here. You read Washington. Washington played, I believe it was the preseason NIT. I know they played two games in Madison Square Garden, and they were both competitive contests. Washington covered the spread in both those games, a two-point loss to Marquette, a six-point loss to Duke. So while you cashed a ticket and out here in Las Vegas, you know, hey, you love the Huskies. Hey, you guys did your job. They're looking at it, hey, we didn't do our job the last time we went to New York City. And Washington, you read the quotes, they're not happy to be here. They're a team saying, hey, we feel like we got snubbed by the NCAA. The best way we can prove that is to win this tournament and cut down the nets at Madison Square Garden. So while Minnesota's been playing great basketball to get here, I'm not sure they're going to be the more focused of the two teams tonight.
The conundrum in breaking him down, and we talked about this with Washington State yesterday without Brock Modum, who had been their leading scorer. Washington State's come out and actually won two games. It almost won convincingly against Pitt. They had an awful final minute last night. Here comes Minnesota without Ralph Sampson. Starts in the Big Ten tournaments. What do? Well, they beat Northwestern, lose to Michigan in overtime, very well-played game. The three games in this tournament, they beat the spread by 44.5 points, almost 15 points per game. Was Sampson really that much of an anchor on their team? That's a hard question for us, and that's why we've got a difficulty with the game, is because we're sort of repurposing and repackaging a team in a way that they're above our expectation level. Could they come crashing down tonight? Yes, they could, but it's just been fascinating to see how much better they've been without Sampson.
We've been getting great emails in all week, a lot of questions about hedging strategies for futures in the Final Four. We're going to answer those questions with tomorrow, Dave.
We'll lead off tomorrow.
Yeah, so tomorrow. So be sure you tune in again tomorrow. If you have other questions or you have your own hedging question you want to ask, please send it in. The email address, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter, @VegasSportsDay. And you can make your voice heard in the forums, covers.com/posting forum, with active threads and discussions going right now.
Coming up next, we're going to head to the American League Central, where we don't think the Tigers are as good as everyone says they are. The problem is, who can we find from the other cast to beat them? You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because David, you should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
It's AL Central breakdown time. Five teams to discuss. And like yesterday, the chart you're about to see is going to show last year's win total and this year's odds to win the division. Let's start at the top. Detroit won 95 games a season ago, picked up Prince Fielder in the offseason. Look at that chalk, minus 550 to win the AL Central. The rest of the division, they were sub 500 last year. There are some issues once again in 2012. Cleveland won 80 games a season ago, the Tribe a plus 1,200 to win the division this year. Chicago White Sox won 79 games last year. They're 17-1 to come out of the AL Central. KC won 71 games a season ago. The Royals, 13-1 to win the division. And Minnesota, 63-win team a year ago. I guess they're the second choice because they're 10-1 to win the AL Central this year. So, Dave, let's start with Detroit. What's your first take on the Tigers?
Yeah, let's start at the top before we get into this muddled mix of the rest. Yeah, Detroit's a very prohibitive favorite. Part of that, too, is, again, the rest of the division isn't that strong. I mean, look at this Tiger full season over-under. Is the market placing them in the wrong place? Yeah, a lot of great things happened in 2011 that aren't likely to repeat. Justin Verlander, best season he's likely to ever have in his career. Is Johnny Peralta going to match last year? Unlikely. Avila is going to match last year? Unlikely. Miguel Cabrera, fabulous player. Can he match last year? Unlikely. Oh, you bring in Prince Fielder. Well, Victor Martinez hit 330 and drove in over 100 runs. So Fielder is a little bit better than Victor Martinez. That's all. This isn't like you brought Fielder in to replace some average player. You lose the Martinez numbers, you replace him with Fielder. So we've got a team that's got a lot of issues, and maybe the biggest. You think Valverde's going to go 49 for 49 on saves again this year? No, not going to happen. Last year was a max out for a lot of the key parts of the Tigers. So now what happens? Pendulum's pulling back a little bit. Verlander's very good. He won't be as good. Cabrera's very good. May not be as good. It's going to happen up and down the lineup. But now here's your big problem. Defense. Doesn't matter when Verlander and Scherzer are starting. But when you look at Fister, when you look at Porcello, guys who pitch the contact, this Detroit defense, still a muddled mess. Heading up to opening day, they still don't have a rotation settled. They want to try to get Cabrera some games at third base. Not a real good idea. Actually, moving Brandon Inge over to second, where it's possible that'll be no good with the glove or with the bat, that's a little bit shaky. Yeah, Detroit's going to win this division, but if you could find a good over-under for season wins, maybe a nice little spot to fade. The Tigers could have a dynamic year and win 88 or 89.
Exactly. I agree 100% with that assessment, Dave. And of course, Fister, of all the guys who I don't expect to repeat what they did last year, Fister's 1.79 ERA after being traded to Detroit. I'll take the over 1.79 for the limit on Doug Fister. Now, the Tigers were the third most profitable team in Major League Baseball to support last year, behind Arizona and Milwaukee. What's the commonality between those three teams? Well, they're all smaller market squads. They were all, quote-unquote, surprise teams. Even though they're all expected to be competitive, I don't think anyone, at least Arizona wasn't necessarily, but Milwaukee and Detroit were expected to be good, but not very good. They both ended up being very good teams, and they all played well down the stretch in September, able to pad that win total. The other thing the Tigers did last year was they went over the total on a regular basis, 84-66 to the over. And, of course, when you add into the mix Prince Fielder, you would expect these totals to be going up a little bit. But then you look at who was really profitable to support for Detroit last year. Obviously, Fister was pretty good. Verlander, well, when you win the MVP as a pitcher, it tells you had a pretty special season, not just the Cy Young Award. And then, of course, the hidden gem, Rick Porcello, who's a guy who's not going to blow you away. He pitches to contact. Tigers went 21-10 in his 31 starts. He was almost as profitable to support as Justin Verlander, who was Detroit went 25-9 in his starts. So the one thing, again, we talked about this yesterday. I'm probably going to talk about this every day on the show when we look at these MLB previews. More than any other sport, more than football, more than basketball, with baseball, teams, when we're looking at win totals, teams are going to change dramatically from how they look in April to what they're doing in June to what they do with the trading deadline to how they're playing in September. And there's pretty good potential here from some youngsters in the minors in the pitching, you know, some pitching prospects. Andy Oliver, Drew Smyly, Jacob Turner, all well-regarded prospects, one of whom may make the opening day roster and end up being the fifth starter. But they'll have some guys to call up when the situation arises, should injury strike and the like. Not in love with Austin Jackson as the leadoff man. We're talking about a guy that struck out 170 and 181 times in his first two seasons in this role. But Jim Leland saying, hey, I don't have any other viable alternatives at the top of the order. So lack of speed, lack of defense, these may well be issues that hamper Detroit's ability to really get over that hump and end up being a 95-win team again in 2012.
So Detroit, they'll win the division because the other teams are so bad. And, of course, that's a big part of where that 95 came from last year. If you're the only winning team in your division and you've got a team that almost lost 100 games, there's a lot being handed to you. Can we find anything out of the rest? But one of our focuses in this division is going to be on defense. Cleveland's got a nice scrappy chemistry. I'll almost consider them like a B-minus version of a Tampa Bay, a team that's got guys who will play hard. If the young infielders play defense the way they believe they can, it's an interesting mix. You've got a lot of ground ball pitchers in that Cleveland starting rotation. If the defense is there, they can be fine. The depth of the Cleveland bullpen, a very underrated factor. So we see a little bit of upside out of Cleveland, but the first thing we're going to be charting in April, team defensive numbers. The jury's out on Kipnis and a couple of these young guys as to just how good they're going to be with the gloves. Can Cabrera have a better season with the glove than last year? We're going to be watching that Cleveland defense very closely. If we see positive signs, sneaky value to the Indians. They were number two in the division last year. They could be number two again, even though the markets don't want to grant them that yet.
Yeah. And the Indians' minus 56 run differential last year was the worst of any team in baseball that won at least 80 games. And the incredible thing, when you look at Cleveland's season a year ago, they couldn't hit a lick. I mean, that was a bad offensive baseball team a season ago, and yet still, 84-70 to the over a season ago. If Dave's right about this defense for Cleveland, and Cleveland having a real good defense, and I'm with him 100%. When you look at that bullpen, you know, we saw Chris Perez save, 36 games last year, missed a good portion of spring training, not the most reliable closer out there, but all the other guys, all the key guys, Joe Smith, Rafael Perez, Vinny Pistano, Tony Stipp, all guys who were on Cleveland last year, all guys who finished the season with a 3.22 ERA or less, all those guys back for the tribe in 2012. And starting staff is okay, even without Fausto Carmona, who's now known as Roberto Hernandez, and in fact, who's 31 years old instead of being 28. He's not going to start the season with the team. Don't know what his status is going to be. And of course, no Grady Sizemore to start the year once again for Cleveland. His career really been derailed by injuries. But, you know, you look at Justin Mashin, who's able to eat up innings. You look at Ubaldo Jimenez, who was a major disappointment in Cleveland, but certainly has potential. Derek Lowe comes over from Atlanta. I'm not sure how much he has left, but a ground ball pitcher, a guy who can keep the ball in the park, and if they're a good defensive team that plays in a low strength. Josh Tomlin, fewest walks per nine innings in the majors last year. Yeah, there's some upside with this rotation. Question, can they hit the baseball? And that, to me, is the key factor to see if Cleveland can approach or even exceed the 500 level.
Rest of the division, you've got a hodgepodge of muddled messes. So let's talk about defense again. Minnesota, the team the markets are trying to say number two on the futures, dead last in the major leagues on our best defensive charts last year. And you can make a case that the defensive lineup they're setting out for game number one this year is worse than last year's. Here's why it's a headache. That starting rotation is entirely built on pitching to contact. Some of these guys are going to have among the lowest strikeout ratios. Look at guys like Jason Marquis, you look at Carl Pavano, some of the lowest strikeout counts of any starters in the majors. So here's a bunch of starters who aren't that great to begin with. Their specialty is pitching to contact. And now you've got a defense that just isn't geared to making a whole lot of plays. That's before we get into the Mauer Morneau wild card aspect. And those are still wild cards. Mauer looks a little healthier this spring with no punch. Hitting for average, no pop. He's only hit one home run in his home ballpark in his career. That's not awfully good. Justin Morneau, they just don't know. He had two home runs in the spring. They both came in the same game. So we think this Minnesota defense, with that pitching staff, could be an awfully awkward mix. The fact that the markets like them to bounce back means there could be value to say, you know what, why should they bounce back? Pavana with a bad defense, Nick Blackburn in the rotation with a bad defense. If you've got Jason Marquis in your rotation, that's kind of awkward. You need to be a contender to have a cast-off like Marquis. If you almost lost 100 games and you're adding Marquis, maybe you've got a self-delusion in play.
Now remember, Minnesota was considered to be the favorite or one of the co-favorites in this division last year, and the markets never recognized how bad this team actually was. They finished number 28 on the money charts a season ago. A disaster report. The only teams that were worse, Houston, they were pretty bad. Colorado, they pretty much tanked down the stretch. They were the only teams that were worse than Minnesota for their backers in 2011. Now, you look at spring training, you say, all right, well, Francisco Liriano's had a great spring. You know, now they got an ace at the top of the order, or the top of the rotation, once again. And you look at Morneau. Well, he hit 141. Oops. You know, maybe he'll be ready. He hasn't been able to take the field yet. This is a very similar lineup to the one that was expected to contend for the division title a year ago. Denard Span healthy. And again, all the injuries a season ago, well, they are relatively healthy coming to the campaign. Doesn't mean injuries won't strike again for Minnesota. And a lot of, I think, residual respect for Ron Gardenhire in the number for Minnesota. But with the pitching issues, with the bullpen issues for the Twins, Scott Baker, the team's best starter last year, well, he's fighting through elbow tendonitis. Don't know if he's going to open the season on the DL. The big acquisition, Joel Zamaya, they get him from Detroit. Tore his elbow ligament. He's out for the year. So Minnesota's another team, like Cleveland, like Detroit. They have some good prospects, you know, shortstop Brian Dozier, the outfielder Joe Benson, the first baseman Chris Parmalee, all of whom could see time at the big league level this year. But those guys aren't likely to come up until August, September, later in the campaign. And by that time, the Twins may be hopelessly out of the mix already.
We've already got the Twins out of the mix here. Like I said, we're going to be way across from the markets on them. Not much to get excited about with the other two teams. The White Sox, similar to Minnesota, believing they're better than they are. They're tying so much of their season into getting retreads like Rios and Dunn to come back to form, getting something out of A.J. Pierzynski, who's way past peak. Don't be surprised if Paul Konerko maybe starts to go into a little bit of a fade this year. Biggest news coming out of Chicago as we enter the season. Yep, you want Gavin Floyd? You can have him. You want Jonathan Danks? You can have him. They're available right now. So the fact that we see those teams, two pitchers being talked about in trade rumors, sort of the White Sox saying, ooh, we're coming to opening day and this is what we've got. We should have been building for the future already. Let's start building for the future now.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago's a team that kind of went all in last year. They brought in all the veterans and clearly, with the 79-win total, it did not work out the way that Ozzie Guillen might have liked. Now, the beginning of the Robin Ventura era, and I got an interesting quote here from the aforementioned Paul Konerko, you were just talking about, and I haven't done a lot of quotes in this, but this one I thought was relevant. Here's what he says. What I've learned with myself and some of the guys in here, and just kind of getting older, is that you play this game when you are more comfortable, when you are looser. The other thing I've learned is that you certainly don't play it better when you put insane amounts of pressure on yourself, personally, or as a team. I've never seen that work yet. I've done it a good part of my life, and I haven't seen it work. Well, no pressure this year for Chicago. You know, some positive signs. Rios has had a good spring. Adam Dunn has had a good spring. Gordon Beckham has had a good spring for the White Sox. But, again, we're talking about a team upside, you know, finishing 500. Downside, trading all the good starters and finishing with about 60 wins.
One team that's got an awful lot of upside on the field is Kansas City. Not only a good lineup, but a lineup that's locked into contracts for several years. You're going to be able to watch these guys develop. They're going to hit for average. They're going to move on the bases. Outside of Hosmer, maybe not a lot of long ball power, but now here comes the Kansas City problem. Until Duffy is ready, boy, it's hard to find upside anywhere in that starting rotation. Luke Halkabar came around to his probably the best year of his career last season and showed us that he's about as good as he's going to be. He's the type of guy who's liable to top out at about 15 wins ERA in the low fours. But look at all of the kegs of dynamite they have to send to the mound. Bruce Chen can fool people a little bit. When he's bad, he's real bad. Jonathan Sanchez, good luck with that. Just so many, you know, Paulino almost being the same thing. When he's on his game, Paulino's got dynamite stuff, and when he's not, you get a lot of out in the third, out in the fourth type of thing. So it's a starting rotation that's going to struggle to keep the team in game. So what we're seeing with Kansas City, and maybe we don't start early in the year when the weather's not real good, but the oddsmakers might be a little bit soft on Kansas City totals. This offense may be better than the markets perceive, and all of these starting pitchers have a chance to actually be worse than they were last year. So people who are giving Chen the best of it, giving Paulino the best of it, giving Sanchez the best of it, might be making a mistake there.
Yeah, and of course, with the Royals, one factor that would contribute to some of those overs, they already lost Soria out for the year, which leaves them with some real concerns at the back end of the bullpen in closing out games. And that was an issue for them last year. Kansas City had the single best record in Major League Baseball on the run line last year at +1.5 as a dog and at -1.5 in the few instances where they were favored. They were one off the MLB high in one-run losses. They had 32 one-run losses a season ago. Only Cincinnati had more with 33. So they were close. You know, in games, couldn't find a way to win them. Couldn't get the clutch hit or the clutch out to win them. They did have some nice September momentum. I made some money backing the Royals down the stretch. They went 11-3 over a 14-game span before losing the last two. And, you know, there's reasons for optimism. Certainly, that lineup that Dave was talking about, I mean, you look at the two youngsters, you know, in the corners, Eric Hosmer at first base, Mike Moustakas at third. You know, that's the best 1-2 combo for Kansas City in terms of young prospects since mid-90s, maybe Johnny Damon and Carlos Beltran. It's been a while since we've had any sense of optimism in KC, but the pitching here is going to be a major concern, and maybe even a bigger concern considering they've already lost their starting catcher, Salvador Perez, hurt his knee, and he's not likely to be back until July, which could make a suspect pitching staff that much worse.
Teddy's not thrilled with the great Humberto Quintero behind the plate, and you shouldn't be. Okay, that's enough baseball for today. Time to head to the NBA hardwoods. It's money time, straight ahead.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, guys, it's money time! Yeah, that's me doing jiu-jitsu. Very nice, yeah. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start tonight in the NBA in Philadelphia, where the 76ers, 9-point favorites against the Cleveland Cavaliers. And this is a Sixer team that we've gotten a lot of mileage from on this show. The pattern remains extraordinarily consistent. Power rating number flat here or here. Or here in this range, power rating number stayed flat, but the bottom line for Philly, they've been able to beat up on the weak, and they keep getting beat by the strong. The numbers bear that out. Favorites of -7 or more, the Sixers 19-1 straight up, 17-3 ATS this season. They've been monsters in this role. Ask them to step up in class. Hasn't been nearly as pretty, but this is not obviously a step up in class type of ballgame. 4-0 straight up and against the spread in this point spread category since the All-Star break. They've beaten the spread by an average of 10.5 points per game since the All-Star break in those last four straight-up wins and covers in this role. And the setting is prime for Philly. They're at home. They're rested. They're coming in off a poorly played loss at San Antonio. The next 2 days are off. So the question to ask, is Cleveland going to be the next victim?
We focus on this game today partly because of those Philadelphia patterns and how strong they've been, but also an unusual move by Byron Scott yesterday. Now, Cleveland's struggling right now. Without Anderson Varejao up front, there's no interior defense. Not only do you lose Ramon Sessions at point guard, but Daniel Gibson's got a bad ankle, so weak in the backcourt. The defense is just crumbling. So at a time when he's got a young and fragile squad, and you might think, look, Kyrie Irving's good to build around next year. You've got a future here. Let's just get through this season and move on. What does he do yesterday? The single longest and apparently most physical practice of the entire year. His way of saying, you know what, we're not going to give up on this season yet. Take a look at what Scott has to say about that as he frames the issue from his standpoint. I think they should come out and play as hard as they can. Other guys should be looking at it as another opportunity to get playing time and to go out there and contribute to the team. Here's what we think he's saying. Guys, play well for me because I might get fired. That, yeah, if I knew I was guaranteed to be around for a while, we would manage this a little bit differently. Yeah, we don't care if we win the rest of the games. We're not going to the playoffs anyway. But guys, you know, try to hang in because I could get fired. Well, if you don't want to get fired, the best way to avoid that in terms of motivating your players may not be to put them through a boot camp. You know, when they're going bad, when they're physically and mentally worn down, could this actually backfire on Scott tonight? Instead of them coming out with fire, could they instead say, Coach, why did you make us go through that? It's going to be a very interesting team to watch in the next few games.
You know, and Byron Scott's notion of getting his team to play hard, that worked a lot this NBA season. It continues to work for some teams in some matchups where effort is all you need to get a point spread cover against the opponents that aren't matching that same level of effort. Doesn't work against Philadelphia. It really doesn't. This Doug Collins squad has been chemistry and execution personified in 2012. And again, you look at the numbers. Number one in fewest assists in the NBA. No one else even close. Number one in turnover differential. Number one in assist to turnover ratio. Number two in fewest opponents assists allowed. They're just not an easy team to beat on effort alone. And frankly, the Cavs, that's what they have right now. Still working a lot of new faces into the rotation for Byron Scott and company.
Second game we're going to focus on brings you a lot of old faces instead of new ones. Let's go out to Phoenix right now where the Spurs, 1.5-point favorites over the home Suns. And we've told you so many times how much we like Greg Popovich, except that one night in Portland. But that's okay, Pops. You've more than made up for that over time. San Antonio faces a 3-3 over the weekend. So what do? They win all three. They win the first game without Tony Parker. They win the second without Manu Ginobili. They win the third without Tim Duncan. Spaces it well, wins all the games, but has fun in the process. While you were watching the college Elite Eight games on Sunday, great little thing that Pops did. Tim Duncan was not going to dress Sunday against the 76ers. And of course, when you fill out that roster, someone is going to be inactive, and usually you will list the reason why they're inactive. You list an injury, you list personal reasons. What did he write down next to Tim Duncan's name? Old. O-L-D. Said, Tim's not going to play tonight. He's just old. But look at the way that this chemistry has come together because the players respect the coach. Scott, what he's doing in Cleveland, there's a gamble now. Popovich, there's no gamble with the Spurs. There's a level of respect. But now that he got through that cycle, that 3-3 where all of the big cogs got to sit out, now it's go time. Because there are two new players that they're working into the rotation. Steven Jackson, Boris Diaw. Look at the minutes Diaw got right off the bat against Philadelphia on Sunday. Look for San Antonio to be pretty close to an A level tonight. That is a deep and an interesting rotation.
Oh, yeah. Spurs may well be the team to beat in the Western Conference when playoff time rolls around. But for Phoenix, this team's just fighting to get there. And boy, the Suns, they're fighting hard and they're playing good basketball. The numbers don't lie for Phoenix. The chemistry has fallen into place in recent weeks. Since the All-Star break, 11-4 straight up, 12-3 against the point spread. And two of those four straight up losses, they led Oklahoma City and Miami by double-digit margins on the road before ended up losing those ball games. So, yeah, they're playing pretty good. And so much of it comes from the leader. I mean, Steve Nash, he's not a guy who's been under-publicized throughout the course of his career, but he's old now, too. And yet Steve Nash putting up, once again, truly remarkable numbers from a point guard at this stage of his career. The numbers don't lie. Take a look. Nash, assists per 48 minutes, 16.5. The next best in the NBA, 14. So he's blowing away the league in that category. Field goal percentage, 54.3%. That's number six. And those aren't just all fast break layups. No, he's hitting his jumpers. He's hitting his, you know, from three-point range. He's able to drive and pop from the lane. The top five in that category are all centers, guys who just dunk and dunk and dunk, and that's what they do. That's not Nash's game. I don't know if Nash can reach the rim at this stage of his career. So what he's done, truly remarkable. And, you know, they put this run together. They're over 500 now for the season. They're within a game and a half of that final playoff spot in the West, and it's very attainable to think they're going to get a playoff berth or contend for that playoff berth. And who are the other five starters for Phoenix? Well, you have Marcin Cortat, you have Jared Dudley, you have Channing Frye, you have Grant Hill. Not guys who are necessarily going to wow you or contend for all-star team. So Nash deserves that much more credit for what he's been able to do. The bench, you know, they're relatively deep, but it's not like the bench is loaded with talented guys who would be getting major minutes on championship-level teams. You know, Nash is not going to get MVP votes this year the way that he once did, but how many other players in the league could turn this group into a winning team? Not many, Dave. Not many at all.
That'd be a good question. Like, you put Chris Paul with this group, they're not winning.
Nope.
Derrick Rose with those other four, are they winning?
Maybe. Depends, yeah. Depends how bad his back is.
Yeah, because he can create enough for the others. That's actually the question of the day here on Vegas Sports Day. How many other NBA players can you remove Nash? Who else can you put in and still get a winning record, you know, out of that bunch?
Play of the daytime. What do we got for him, Dave?
Get our own winning record out there. We talked about Stanford, Massachusetts at the very top. We think the wrong favorite out there in this game. A couple of dynamics on the court that we like. UMass, outstanding defensive pressure. Stanford for the full season, still a minus turnover to assist team. That's bad this deep in the schedule. A minus 50 despite the fact that you're in the Pac-12 where almost no one presses. So look for Stanford to be pretty vulnerable against that Mass defense. And boy, if you haven't watched Chaz Williams yet in this tournament, make sure you're watching tonight. Just in this tournament alone, 22.7 points a game, 6.3 rebounds a game coming from a point guard, more than twice as many assists as turnovers. Stanford doesn't have the point guard to match up with Williams. The UMass defensive pressure has them playing on into Thursday in the NIT Finals.
Take the Minutemen plus the points, the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. That's going to wrap it up for our Tuesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck.